It's showtime.
People should not be afraid of their governments. Governments should be afraid of their people.
You know, the right to bear arms is because that's the last form of defense against tyranny.
Washington is fundamentally corrupt. There are more words in the IRS code than there are in the Bible.
Made in America, heard around the world. You're listening to Blunt Force Truth. I'm Chuck Woolery, along with my co-host Mark Young, and Washington is astir. Washington's always astir. It's just it's a total wreck there, and everybody's afraid we're in. You know, that Trump has pulled out of Syria. So the way I understand it, see if this makes any sense to you. We had 50 guys on the border of Syria, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And Trump and Erdogan, from what I understand, had a conversation with Trump and said, "Look, I'm going to invade Syria."
Correct.
And Trump said, crap, you know, how can I dissuade you from doing that? No, I'm going to invade it. And so Trump said, well, if you go so far, I'm going to put sanctions on you and everything else. But in the meantime, I'm getting my guys out of there. So he moved the 50 troops out.
Right, which would have just been slaughtered.
Exactly, because it wouldn't have been a deterrent at all. And Turkey declares war on the border of Syria and the Kurds. Actually, the PPK, the Kurds, are more, they're all Marxists over there, the PPK. People can't distinguish between good Kurds and bad Kurds like they can't distinguish.
Is this like a cheese curd? I love the cheese curds.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's just amazing.
Yeah, those are really good.
How uninformed we are. So anyway, Erdogan lays down the law and says he's invading, and Trump pulls the 50 troops out and moves them to southern Lebanon or southern Syria. And everybody's all upset at Trump for protecting our men. I mean, what are we going to do? Go to war with Turkey?
Well, think about it. You got AOC, who's now turned into a hawk. She was complaining that we needed to pull him out. But because Trump pulled him out, now it's bad.
Democrats are always for and against war. They're like, you know, pick a day. And
I mean, think of this, Chuck. If you look at President Trump right now. Mm-hmm. He did prison reform, right?
Right.
He's helped get employment for blacks and women greater than in history.
Right.
He's pulled troops out of harm's way.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
He's the greatest Democratic president they've ever had.
Well, I know, but they're not going to give him credit for anything. I mean, you know that as well as I do. But I mean,
it just sounds like a Democrat.
It's astounding to me because I'm not sure. You know, I have to admit, geopolitical wars, I don't know anything about that. I really don't. And you got I do know this, and that is that Eisenhower said, if you want to be aware of something, be aware of the industrial military complex. They will get you in more trouble than anybody. And it seems like every general that Fox brings on or anybody brings on, every colonel is all, they can't understand what Trump is doing. Of course, Lindsey Graham comes on. He hasn't been right about anything in 20 years when it comes to foreign policy. And so, you know.
Why change things now?
Well, I know, but everybody's against this. I don't know how this is going to work out. I have no idea what Trump had in mind other than saving 50 Americans who were on that front line that Turkey was going to invade.
That's all it amounted to.
My question is, when a country like Turkey, they're powerful, and they're a NATO ally. We have bases in Turkey. We have three bases in Turkey.
We do.
So when they lay down the law, basically, to Trump and said, look, we're invading and we're going to come full force, get out of the way. What's he supposed to do? Say, well, no, you're not, because we're going to fight you.
With 50 people.
Well, with anything. I mean, whether you call airstrikes or whatever, all of a sudden, are we going to be at war with Turkey?
It's a problem.
Well, what do you do?
I think the president's doing the right thing right now, which is you hit them with sanctions. You try to cripple their economy.
That's not going to stop them. You and I both know that because Erdogan's, you know, bad guy. And on top of that, they're in bed with Russia. And so now it's kind of interesting because they're going against Russia.
Yeah. So you have an issue that you either get your 50 people out or you send 50,000 in.
Exactly. And of course, the industrial complex would say send 50,000 in.
Except the Democrats have already fought that they don't want the president to have the power to declare any wars or to launch any wars. So they don't want him to do that. Well, Chuck, we're going to get away from, we're going to drift a little bit away from politics today.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad I got that out of my system.
We've got that out of your system. We're going to drift a little bit away from politics today, and we are going to talk about entrepreneurship. And entrepreneurship is amazingly important, and it does play into politics, but not in the way that we normally talk about it. So we're going to talk to a friend of mine today, a guy who has changed. I'm going to tell you, Chuck, this is, we're going to talk with Gino Wickman. And first off, I want to tell you that Gino's the creator of something called EOS, the Entrepreneurial Operating System. Mm-hmm. And there's what, 10,000 companies on EOS right now, Gino?
Getting close. A little over 7,000 with 70,000 using the tools.
Well, we'll welcome you, Gino. It's nice to have you on the show now that Mark's already let it out of the bag. So you've been listening and watching and very patiently. And welcome to the show, Gino.
Thank you.
Our company itself, Chuck, is an EOS company. And so Gino's systems have completely altered the way we run our business, and it's altered the way other people run their business.
See, I have to admit, I'm kind of an outlier here. I've always been the horse, and everybody else was the jockey my entire career. No matter, I always worked for other people, so I never really had my own business. Although I was my own business,
yeah. And we have owned several businesses together. So you have been
any money on those?
Yeah, we did quite a lot of money in the Chuck Woolery signature products.
Oh yeah, okay.
We did a substantial amount of money back.
Yeah, I can't even remember that. I'm so not.
Well, your Chuck Woolery, you know, a few million dollars doesn't even register in your memory.
Thank you so much for that. I'm sure people really love me for that.
Oh God, that was only $10 million. I don't even remember that. All right. So Gino has a new book out. We're going to talk about that. His new book is called Leap.
Okay.
And or the Entrepreneurial Leap.
Well, let me ask you something. I mean, when people talk about their books, half the time they talk about the book and everything else. You get through it and you go, why should I buy this? Why would you buy this, Gino? What are you going to learn? What's the average guy going to learn from something like this by picking up your book and reading it?
Yeah, that's great. Great question and great place to start. So it is for anyone who thinks that they are an entrepreneur in the making, that they have the potential to become an entrepreneur. And so I've spent my whole...
What are those potentials? What do people look for in themselves to identify themselves as a possible entrepreneur?
Yeah, it's six essential traits, and I spell them out. It's visionary, passionate, problem solver, driven, risk taker, and responsible. And so anyone that possesses those six essential traits, odds are pretty good they're an entrepreneur in the making, and Mark's raising his hand.
Yeah, right. Mark's raising his hand like, I'm one.
I think Gino can vouch for that.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
It's enough about me. Let's talk about you. What do you think about me?
Well, here's the thing, Chuck. First off, entrepreneurial, you hear a lot of people today talk about, I'm an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of a buzzword now that everybody wants to be. But I think one of the things that Gino can get to in this book is just because you think you're an entrepreneur or you want to be doesn't mean you are. And Gino, is that the case? I mean, is there a lot of people who think they're entrepreneurs and they're not?
Yeah, and the reality of this, I mean, it truly is a passion project. And so for 30 years, my whole life has been entrepreneurialism, being an entrepreneur, helping entrepreneurs. And so this, I'm stepping outside of what I've been creating for the last 30 years to go to the front end of the entrepreneurial journey and help people realize that they either are or they aren't, because you're right. Everyone wants to be an entrepreneur right now. In the 70s, everybody wanted to be a rock star. Now everybody wants to be an entrepreneur. And my intention is to really help the ones that think they are, know they are, and then show them a path to get a huge jumpstart on becoming one. And just as quickly, for the ones that aren't, I want to make sure they're clear, because it is so painful and excruciating and hard to become an entrepreneur and build a company. And so the success rate is low, the failure rate is high, and for someone that just doesn't have what it takes, I want them to know on the front end so that I'm going to save them years of pain and suffering, quite frankly.
So when I think of an entrepreneur, I always think of someone, and perhaps this is wrong, but you have to create something. In other words, you have to create something that's completely different than anybody else, or improve on an idea that somebody else had and make it better or make it cheaper or make it whatever. Is that?
Yeah, yeah. So it's right on. So here's my definition of an entrepreneur, and then I want to share one other thing with you after that that'll really help create a context for yourselves and your audience. So the first, you know, my definition is an entrepreneur is someone who sees a need in the world and takes a risk to start a business to fill that need, either by creating something or improving upon something that exists, and then they build an organization with people to take that solution to the world.
And so that's see all these little commercials on television for these little products. I mean, whether it's what's that guy builds a glass boat that has this stuff that you squirt on it and it keeps it, you know what I'm talking about?
I can't. Yeah,
can't think of the name of the product.
But there's a guy on TV selling earwax cleaner.
There are, you know, endless numbers of these little, these guys are all entrepreneurs, I guess.
Well, so someone that invents something is an inventor. If that inventor then goes out and starts a company to get that invention to the world, they are an entrepreneur. And so let me go to the second point, because this will help where, you know, so let's use this term self-employed, okay? And so if you're self-employed, you're somewhere on what I call the entrepreneurial range. And so if
for 50 years, I have described myself as self-employed.
Yeah, yeah. And so with that, because you're going to see where you fall in this range. And so on the far left end of the range, if you picture in your mind what I call self-employed. And then on the far right end of the range, I call that true entrepreneur. And those are those six essential traits alive and well. And so anyone who's self-employed is somewhere on that range. And so if we go to the far left, like yourself, that is the one-man show, the sole proprietor, the person with a side hustle, the freelancer. It might even be somebody that buys a franchise organization, something like that. And so that one-person show is still self-employed. Very admirable, very respectable, and they've taken a risk. It's just a question of where you are on that range, because on the far right side of that range are the greatest entrepreneurs of all time. Henry Ford, Steve Jobs, Oprah Winfrey, Sarah Blakely, the whole gamut. But those are the ones on the extreme, and so everyone falls somewhere, every self-employed person falls somewhere on that range.
Now, this is the first time on this show that Chuck Wooler has ever been put on the far left.
I was thinking exactly the same thing. Thank you. Yeah. Well, he's right. That's exactly where I belong. However, on that scale anyway, but if you take, it's funny, if you hear about the Nike story,
yeah,
the Steve Jobs story, or not the Steve Jobs, but Bezos story.
Yeah.
Selling books out of the trunk of his car. The other guy, I don't know what he was doing, inventing soles for shoes or something and selling them to people. I have no idea. But they all started in these very – and Steve Jobs started in their garage working on, you know, the computer, trying to build this computer that was a little bit different with Apple. So all of these guys start very, very small and very humbly. And I mean, the big ones that we're talking about right now, does everyone start, do you have to have a lot of capital to start and be an entrepreneur?
No, I love that question, because that's something else I hit head on through a lot of research. And so it's really interesting. So no is the short answer. And the statistics show something like 92% of all businesses that start do not rely on outside funding. And so this whole thing with people thinking they start a business and raise capital in millions of dollars, those are the rare exceptions. Those are the 8%. And so, you know, I started my business with no money. As do, 92%, not going to outside funds, starting with my own funds, my own savings, their own savings, their own funds. So yeah, it's a fallacy.
Mm-hmm. Gino, well, that's encouraging, actually.
Yeah. Here, here.
I got to tell you, and I deal with entrepreneurs all the time. And I find that in many cases, the entrepreneurs that are focused on fundraising, that are constantly out there raising funds, I see so many of them spend more of their time trying to raise money than trying to be an entrepreneur.
They're like congressmen.
And affect the marketplace.
I injected politics into this all the time.
Yeah, 100%.
Raise money and do nothing.
And on that note, so that gets to, something I'm very passionate about. This book is written in three parts. Part one is confirm, and that's confirming whether you are or aren't. Part two is what I call glimpse, showing a glimpse of what is possible for an entrepreneur. And then part three is path, showing a path to make the road less bumpy and increase their odds. Well, in that glimpse part of the book, I spend time talking about all of the options, all of the types of businesses, all of the industries, size of business, product business, service business, B2B, B2C, because the point I'm making is everyone's thinking that entrepreneurship and business means high-tech, billion-dollar unicorns raising funds, and that's not it at all. The person that starts a heating and cooling company from scratch and builds it to this beautiful $5 million company generating a 20% profit, that is incredibly admirable and hard to do. And so it's not all about billion-dollar companies. It does damage for everyone to think that that's what entrepreneurship is, and anything less is some kind of a failure.
Well, Gino, we're told right now in the media and amongst academia that everyone needs to rush into college. You get out of high school, you have got to go to college, you've got to get at least a bachelor's degree, something better than that. Is entrepreneurship an alternative to college? Does everyone belong in college, in your opinion?
Yeah, I love that question, and I'm a little biased, but I'm going to give you what my research shows. So I did not go to college. Out of high school, I could not wait to get out of academia. It is not for me. I wanted to go to work. I wanted to make money. I wanted to get out there. And so with that, studies show only 44% of small business owners have a degree, which tells you that more than half don't have a degree. So, but here's what, to take my bias out of it, because I was biased for 20 years. And so I, in all of the entrepreneurs I've worked with, talked with, I had this question I would always ask because I was so curious. And I would say, you know, did you go to college? In almost every case, they went to college, for what that's worth. What I would ask them is I would say, is there anything that you learned in college from your degree that you're applying to the business you're running now? And in almost every case, they say no. And so then there was the bias. I'm thinking, why on earth would you ever go to college? Well, what I started doing about 10 years ago is asking a follow-up question. And I started to say, if you knew everything you knew now, would you go back to college again? And almost all of them say yes. So now follow this. So I said, why? What did you get out of it? And so as I was doing my interviews for this book, what I found is what they got out of college were the relationships, the social aspect, the testing ground, the opportunity to, you know, kind of play with their entrepreneurial skills. So long story short, it's a choice that everyone needs to make. And so I go into, you know, a lot of detail, a lot of research, a lot of data around this. Entrepreneurs that are very successful that do have degrees that we all know, that don't have degrees that we all know. At the end of the day, it's a choice. If I had to do it over again, I certainly would not.
Well, if you were a young person, you're a young person, 19, 20 years old, and you feel like you have entrepreneurial qualities.
Yes.
Okay? And your parents are saying, okay, I don't care what you think you have. You're going to go to school, and that's the way it is. We're sending you to college. And so they reluctantly go.
Yeah.
What do they study that really will follow them through life in college, that will give them a foundation for being an entrepreneur or pursuing being an entrepreneur?
Yeah, so I give a list, and off the top of my head, I can't remember the 20 things, and I'll try to pull it up fast. But, you know, first of all, taking an entrepreneurship is at the top of the list. And you know, but I will say some are good, some are bad. So it's hit or miss. But I'm looking at the laundry list here. But here are some things. Psychology, economics, finance and accounting, philosophy, emotional intelligence, sales, negotiation, leadership, management, marketing, communications, storytelling, improvisation, drama, debate, public speaking, technical writing, computer programming, coding, organizational development and behavior, creative writing, and business law. So those are what I suggest.
And what is the one thing out of that entire list that encompasses most of it?
Well, I would say, that's a big question.
Actually, I think it's very small. I think I can point that out.
Well, I mean, so I would go to entrepreneurship if it's a good entrepreneurship training, but I'm dying to hear your answer.
Sales.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Sales is a great background for communication.
Yeah.
For debate, for presentation.
Yeah.
For almost everything that's the bottom line for being a good entrepreneur. You got to be a good salesman. You really do.
That's for sure.
And most people aren't. Yeah. Most people are just, you know, give me, I want that shirt. Good. We're going to pay for it. And that's it. There's no sales involved. But when you have to get out on the road and sell things to people and convince them that it's a good thing to do and you're successful at it, that seems to me like it'd be a great, I mean, I'm just talking off the top of my head. I don't know.
You were a salesman before you were a talent.
I was a salesman most of my life, and so was my father.
But I mean, you were a literally, you were a real salesman before you were a TV talent, though.
I was. But I'm not using that as an example for me because I'm really not an entrepreneur. As you said, I'm on the far left. But I've always thought that sales was a great foundation for almost anything you want to accomplish in life. If you want
to and on that note, you know, that entire list, you'll have a marketing person who would debate you that it's marketing, and we could go down the list, you know, because it's as much psychology and emotional intelligence, because there's an argument. There are people that will fight for their life that say it's all emotional intelligence. So it's you know, that's the list. And that list comes from feedback from hundreds of entrepreneurs in their opinion. So it's not me making up this list.
Well, that was my opinion. What's your opinion? You're the expert.
What is my opinion on the list?
Is out of that whole list, what's the single foundation?
If there were one, I would have put one on the list. So the reality of it is that's me then pouring over that list. So it's hard for me to pick one, but if it were a great entrepreneurial program, and what I'm hoping is that this book is going to find its way into those entrepreneurial programs, because I think this is one, then that would be at the top of the list.
You know, Gino, you probably know Peter Thiel or have met him.
I have not met him. I certainly know of him and read his book, and I'm a fan.
Peter made a comment. I heard him make a comment. He was asked if he could go back and do anything over in his career, what would he change? And he said what he would change is he wouldn't have wasted his time in Yale Law School.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, here's a guy who's a great entrepreneur who has built a fortune, and that's what he would do different. So let me ask a question. When we look at entrepreneurship, we see a lot of things. We hear a lot of things in the news about leveling the playing field. Mm-hmm. You know, that African Americans don't have advantages, or that Hispanics don't have advantages, whatever the case is. Does entrepreneurship kind of leveling field? Because doesn't everyone have the opportunity, if you have the skill sets, if you have the traits, and you have an idea?
Yeah, 100%. You know, and on this, you know, I'd love to spend a few minutes on it. You know, I understand that your show has a conservative leaning to it, but I will say this to you. I'll say a couple things. You know, all of my clients and the entrepreneurs I work with, because that's another question I'm just curious and I ask. It is right down the middle in terms of the entrepreneurs I work with. Half of them are Republicans, half of them are Democrats. And these people are all hardworking, really good, down-to-earth, generous people making a huge impact on the world, creating a ton of jobs. And so it's so fascinating how it's split right down the middle. But
I will guarantee you that none of them are socialists.
I haven't asked them that question.
Well, that's an interesting question to ask, because a socialist world, you don't have the opportunity to be an entrepreneur.
Yeah, and that's interesting. And that's the extent of how political I get in terms of that question. But, you know, so I don't know how far they lean one way or the other, but they're
split. Would you agree or disagree with what I just said, the statement that I just made?
Odds are they're probably not socialists.
No. The statement I made was, in a socialist world, in a socialist economy, you don't have the opportunity to be an entrepreneur as you do in a capitalist economy.
Yeah, that's my understanding.
Okay.
Yeah. So on that, I want to just quickly read two paragraphs to you, because I can't memorize this paragraph, but this says exactly what you're saying, I think, Mark. But I call it the nature of entrepreneurship. And I write, the beauty of entrepreneurship is that there's no entitlement, tenure, or seniority, no pension or guarantees. It's the great equalizer, perfect and pure. Doing well doesn't depend on your past, present, or future. It only depends on the value you're bringing to the world right now. If you bring no value, you get nothing. If you bring incredible value, you reap the rewards. Entrepreneurship doesn't care about your feelings. There are no handouts or freebies. That's why only a small percentage of the population is cut out for it. And so again, Democrat, Republican, wherever you lean, it's irrelevant. And again, everyone that I interact with in this world, they're split right down the middle. And so it's beautiful in that I truly do call it kind of the great equalizer.
Well, most what you described is pure giant capitalism. Successful entrepreneurs are really on the left. I mean, Apple is on the left.
The big tech guys are. I agree with you. Well, a lot of the big tech people are.
Well, Amazon, I wouldn't call Bezos a tech guy.
He's absolutely a tech guy.
Oh, okay. He's a tech guy.
No, it seems everything about Amazon is tech.
A lot of them are on the left, and they're very successful in a capitalist world.
You can't have entrepreneurship. You can't have what Gino just read without having a free society and without having capitalism. Gino, what's the difference? See, here's where I think people get confused. I think people look at comments that maybe a Bernie Sanders makes against big business or Elizabeth Warren, whatever the case is. But I think more often than not, they're talking about big capital, not big corporations, not entrepreneurship. And I think, you know, I'd like to get your play on the difference between a Fortune 100 company and an entrepreneurial company.
Yeah, here's the best way I can answer that. You know, my whole life, again, has been in entrepreneurship and what I would call small business. And so the system I created, EOS, the Entrepreneurial Operating System, I have been fanatical for 20 years that system was created for an organization that has 10 to 250 employees and is typically doing somewhere between 2 and 50 million in revenue. And I specifically am fanatical about that for a reason. Number one, I find when an organization gets larger than 250 employees or $50 million in revenue, it becomes more bureaucratic, becomes more stodgy, more slow moving. It loses its entrepreneurial spirit. And so I consider those 10 to 250 person companies speedboats. They're able to turn on a dime. They're very agile. With that said, we do have some very large companies. The largest EOS client to date, I think, has somewhere in the neighborhood of 5,000 employees, does $3 billion in revenue. But it is an extreme rare exception that organization has been able to remain entrepreneurial at that size. It's just really hard to maintain that for whatever reason. So I stay in this wonderful world of small business, and I play there, and I make no bones about don't pull any punches about that's the sweet spot for us. And so to your question about large companies and publicly held and billion-dollar organizations, I just stay away from it because it's not my sweet spot, and I don't want to spend a second trying to figure out what works and doesn't work for them.
I guess where I'm going, though, the type of person who becomes the president of General Electric, that's a completely different human being than the person who created their own company.
And I haven't studied that enough to stake a claim from me on that, but I do believe there are, you know, some entrepreneurial CEOs out there. But I haven't studied that enough to give you an intelligent answer, frankly.
So what would if somebody was, let's say we've got listeners, we have lots of listeners who have children that are in that college era, that college age,
yeah,
high school, college age. And I'm thinking that, first off, I'm a big believer that just because you finished high school doesn't mean you should be in college. You should go to college for a reason.
Yeah.
I want to be a doctor. I'm going to be a lawyer. I'm going to be a chef. I'm going to be whatever.
Yeah.
And an education's required. I think to go get the education and I have no idea what I'm going to do with it makes no sense. Would it make sense for parents or for young people, and I think it makes sense, to get this book to start with and sit down and put yourself through the first section of the book and find out who you are?
By the way, to remind everyone, the name of the book is Leap by Gino Wickman.
It's actually called Entrepreneurial Leap.
entrepreneurial leap by Gino Wickman.
Thank you for that, Chuck.
So would you start with that? Would you take that? I think it's the first section of the book you would go through and you find out kind of who you are.
Yeah, so I'm certainly biased in this answer, but you know, my hopes and dreams are that is exactly what happens. I mean, that is because I believe it would be a tremendous service. So yes, at a young age, late teens, I would love for every child to, you know, take the assessment. There's an assessment online that you can take to figure out if you have these six essential traits. The website is e-leap.com. It's a free assessment. Yeah, my hopes is that they all read the first part, take the assessment, and decide if this is the path for them. And if it's not, that's perfectly fine. Amen and hallelujah. This just means this isn't the path for you, but now there's 7,000 other careers for you to choose from. It's just not entrepreneurship. For those that are, to learn at a very young age, it's why I wrote this, because I'm writing this to my 18-year-old self that felt lost and confused and insecure and out of place. I was a mislabeled derelict. I had ADHD. I was an entrepreneur. I didn't know it. That's who this book is for somebody who's trying to figure out what they are and why they're different from most of their friends.
I have two sons that are going through this right now. They're in their 20s. And they both, they have good jobs. They've always been in the service industry and restaurants and things like that. And they know that industry, you know, well enough to set one up by themselves, but they just don't know how to take that next leap, and they want to. They want to do something else, but they don't know what it is.
Here.
In the book.
And just as quickly, you know, then picture the person that is an entrepreneur in the making, 18 years old, goes off to college because they were forced to, graduates college, gets the corporate job. Here they are at 35 years old, an entrepreneur trapped in the corporate world. I'm hoping that they have their light bulb moment as well. So this is for any age, quite frankly.
I remember being with the Pillsbury Company. I'll never forget this. It was a stunning experience for me, and it was minor, but it still stands out today. I'm on a train on my way to Cincinnati with a whole bunch of salesmen, and I'm a new guy on the block. And I did not graduate college. I went 3.5 years, but I didn't graduate. So they're all college graduates, and that's prerequisite for being a salesman in the sales force of Pillsbury. And these are guys all older than I am. I'm in my 20s. And they're complaining about their job. They're complaining about the company. They're complaining about everything. And I remember I stopped and I said, let me ask you guys something. If you're not happy here, why don't you do something else? Oh, we can't. And that was really the answer. We can't. We have families. We're committed to this. We're basically, what they're saying is we're stuck and we're pissed off. Well,
that's people that are not willing to take the risk, Chuck.
Yeah.
You know, when people talk to me about entrepreneurship, I don't know if Gino would appreciate this. I describe being an entrepreneur as walking out on one of those very long rope bridges over a very, very large, you know, gully. And as soon as you step on the bridge, you set the rope on fire. And now you need to see if you can run to the other side before the fire burns through the rope and the whole bridge collapses. Because to me, when I look at entrepreneurship, I'll tell you what, and I'll get Gino's input on this. One of the things that drives me crazy, Gino, is somebody decides they're going to be an entrepreneur part-time. I'm going to keep my regular job and I'm going to be an entrepreneur. And my experience has been, when somebody doesn't walk out on that bridge and set it on fire, as soon as something gets tough, I just take my escape hatch. I've got my job. To heck with it. I'm not going to do this. To me, you have to be 110% in. You've got to put everything on the line. And you just have to fight your way through. I mean, would you agree with that? Or do you think part-time entrepreneurship works?
Well, here's what I would say. You know, so now let's go back to that entrepreneur range. And I actually want to say a few things here because I want to bring everything we've talked about forward into this point that I can hopefully make here. So let's go back to that entrepreneur range we talked about. And on the left side is self-employed. Right side is true entrepreneurs. What I would suggest to you is people on the right side are probably going to just take that leap, take that risk, quit their job, do exactly what you're saying, burn the rope, burn the boats, whatever analogy you want to use. Anyone that's more toward the left side is probably going to take a more conservative approach, less risky approach, and that person that you're describing is probably going to be that one-person show, freelancer. So I would just suggest to you somebody that is that nervous and wants to straddle both, probably more toward the left side, and probably isn't going to build a 50-person organization, but who knows? I think statistically that's probably true, and then there will be anomalies in there. You know, with that said, as you were talking, I couldn't help but think about, you know, your earlier question you asked a few questions ago, you know, about this great equalizer. And, you know, what I learned and my numbers show that about 4% of people are entrepreneurs. And when you talk about, you know, all different types of people, black, white, wherever you come from, background, I really believe that 4% holds true no matter where you're coming from, no matter what your background, no matter. But the other thing, too, is, you know, I hope that this work finds its way into inner cities, certainly other countries, because I believe, you know, if you look at the really successful entrepreneurs that bootstrap businesses and built great businesses, and I'm talking about $2 million, $5 million, $10 million, $20 businesses, they all came from very humble beginnings, hard beginnings, backgrounds where they were poor. And frankly, people with those kind of backgrounds tend to be hungrier, more driven, and end up being more successful. And whatever the reasons are, you know, my father's an incredible entrepreneur, and he came from very humble beginnings. They were certainly poor. And so with that, you know, that's where a lot of, I want to say most of the entrepreneurs come from, quite frankly. So with that, everyone has this opportunity, assuming that you have those six essential traits. I don't know if that made any sense, but I just kind of wanted to.
Well, it absolutely does, because it's, number one, it's very encouraging, because you're saying that the average person who becomes a successful entrepreneur comes from very humble beginnings. So that means the door is open for anyone who has those abilities or kind of can identify them, and they can be wildly successful. So sure, I think that's a very encouraging.
And then the last little point I want to make, and this is, so when we go back to that entrepreneurial range, self-employed, again, there's a ton of respect for someone who's self-employed. And I think about a handy man or a handy person or a handy woman. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Landscaper, whatever the case is.
Exactly. But let's just use a handy man as an example. But you're right. A landscaper. Right now, a person who has those abilities could go out, charge $60 an hour. And this point in time is the perfect time for this. Literally go out and make a six-figure income. They'll make over $100,000 a year being a handyman or person, making $60 an hour. And if they just do great work, show up on time, always, you know, take good care of the customer, within a year, they're never going to have to market or sell again because it's going to be all referral-based, and they'll make $100,000 a year for the next 20 years. So the point is, you know, there's an opportunity for somebody out there right now to go become self-employed. Granted, they may not build a construction company with 50 people, but what an opportunity, you know, in this world for anyone to go do that.
Right. And it certainly wipes out the whole minimum wage argument.
Oh man. So there's
apps now for all of this stuff.
Tackle. Right, and you can work.
It's an app for basically what you're talking about.
Yeah.
So someone got very smart and created an app, and then what's the other thing where Angie's List and stuff like that?
Task Rabbit and different ones like that. I'm going to give you an example. In my neighborhood, if somebody came to our neighborhood and went door to door and offered to clean each house's gutters for probably $300. There's 585 houses that I promise you 70% of them would say, $300, here you go, go do it.
And the point in that is, it is pretty easy to make $100,000 a year working for yourself.
Oh my goodness.
And what a great place to start. So there is just so much opportunity out there.
You could probably make $1,000 a day in my neighborhood right now.
Yeah.
Cleaning gutters.
But you just have to show up on time. You have to do great work and take care of the customer. And then that customer is going to refer you to everyone they know for the next 20 years. You'll be busy forever. And then we'll see where it goes from there. Anyways, I just wanted to get all that.
I get your point, though. There's no reason outside of some type of physical or mental disability.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
And those people we need to help. But outside of those disabilities, there's no reason in this country that someone can't make a great living. I mean, I don't see any way that you can't. Now, is there such a thing as generational entrepreneurs?
Well, there definitely is, but there's nothing that says if your parent was an entrepreneur that you're an entrepreneur. And so the statistics on that show that second generation kids that take over the family business have a 32% success rate. And then from there, the next generation has a 13% success rate. And then from there, it's a 3% success rate. So it greatly drops every generation. So again, not so
you're saying nothing kills a business faster than the next generation.
Well, you know, it's funny. There's a songwriter in Texas. I just heard this over the weekend. It was kind of an interesting song. And he said, the first generation breaks their back. The second generation makes the money. And the third generation throws it away and blames everybody.
So whatever the reasons are, those are the statistics. And so I write an entire chapter in this book on second and third generation entrepreneurs, because the message and the impassioned plea there is having had worked with at least 50 family businesses hands-on, I've seen the good ones and the bad ones. And when the child, son or daughter, does not have those six essential traits, it is excruciating. And you watch that company slowly die. But when they do, you watch that company transform and absolutely explode and grow to the next level.
Well, you know, not to throw politics in here, but it's just so obvious. Trump is a great example of that. His father started off with a very successful building business, and he took it to an entirely different level.
Yeah, and so there's no question that Trump inherited that entrepreneurial
genius. Of course. Well, yeah. Yeah, I guess that's true.
So, building on that for a second, we know we had this generational thing, but there's these six essential traits that you need to have. Let's say that you look through that and you say, well, I have three of these traits, or I have four of these traits. Mm-hmm. Can you partner? Is there such a thing as I go find a partner that has the opposite traits and together we become an entrepreneurial machine? Is that doable?
Well, my quick and short answer would be no, although I'm sure there's an exception or two out there. What I prescribe in the book is that if you don't possess all of those traits, but you do have a passion for entrepreneurialism and you want to be surrounded by it, go find someone that does possess those six essential traits and join forces with them. And so I describe a concept called visionary and integrator. And so visionary is someone who has these six essential traits. An integrator is someone who runs the day-to-day for that visionary entrepreneur. And so, you know, if you want to be around that and you have the ability to run the day-to-day of a business, absolutely joining forces with someone like that. But I'm not so sure that you can go find someone with the first three and someone with the second three, and together you're going to build an empire. I think that that's kind of a long shot.
So you need to have them all. In our company, in the EOS system, Chuck, just to give you an example, I'm the visionary in this company, and Michelle, who you know, she's the integrator. Mm-hmm. She's the person that goes out and makes it all happen, because I have a Colby score that has a follow through of one, and Gino knows what that means. Even though Chuck doesn't, it means that you don't want me to follow through on something. You want me to hand it to someone who will follow through on it.
I can attest to that.
He starts a lot.
Never tell Mark to do anything. Always tell someone beneath him to do it, and it will get done.
I'm learning to delegate. Gina, would you call yourself unemployable? Because that's what I always refer to myself as.
100%.
Well, what does that mean? What do you mean by unemployable? You can't work. Work with anybody else psychologically. It doesn't work for you, or what?
Yeah, what that means is you're just incapable of working in someone else's system, following someone else's rules, following someone else's orders, for lack of a better term. And so, just working for someone, it just doesn't work. You've got to do your own thing. You've got to be free. You've got to play by your own rules. You know, and we will tend to make a lot of mistakes doing that, but we prefer that freedom and bumping our head a lot over you know, following someone else's rules.
You know, it's funny. You've just described my life to a certain extent. I've always worked for someone. I've always had a producer. I've always had a director. I've always had, you know, someone telling me what to do and how to do it to a certain extent. Of course, it depended on my talent to be able to carry that through. But in the context of that, I've worked for lots of different things. I've had, you know, 7 shows on the air. I've worked for people who were incapable of making a decision. And then I've worked for people who were overlords who just demanded that you do everything and they had no clue what they were talking about. Yeah. And it's interesting to have to take all of that and try to balance it out. I mean, I almost went to war with one of the most successful shows I had with a producer, which, and he owned the show, on Love Connection. I mean, literally almost came to blows because he was so insulting and such a nasty guy. Mm. And it happened within the first 2 weeks. And I said, why don't you just fire me and get it over with and get somebody else in here you can push around? For some unknown reason, he kept me on. He was a bully is what he was.
But that's an entrepreneurial behavior on your part, though.
Well, I mean, you have to adapt to a certain extent. I mean, you really just, when you're working for other people, you have to adapt and you have to be really good at it. And you can't be phony about it. You just have to adapt to sometimes their parameters, whatever they are, whether you think they're smart or not.
Yeah, and what's really important here is, you know, we're describing an entrepreneur in those 6 essential traits and making it sound like it's this great thing, you know, and all I'm saying is that's the wiring of an entrepreneur and that leads an entrepreneur to create what they create. Listen, there's a dark side to all of that. You know, it's you know, we're a mess. We have highs and lows. So it's not this glamorous thing we're talking about here. So all we're saying in this conversation is that they're incapable of working for someone, and there's nothing wrong with working for someone. We need workers in this world. You know what I mean? So it's good and bad. Because
you know, it's funny because when I told you, I said I was the horse that everyone rode, and it's true. Yeah. But I knew I was the horse.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't know they're the horse.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't know they're the jockey.
Yeah, yeah.
I have always, for years, described myself when people will say, oh, you're lucky that you're an entrepreneur. You guys own your own business. And I always describe that as, well, I'm just unemployable. I didn't have any other choice.
Yeah, and say that you're lucky to be an entrepreneur on the day that we're curled up in a ball because we just got our ass kicked because we just lost a fortune on a really stupid decision we made or whatever it was that happened where we're licking our wounds trying to figure out how in the hell are we going to save this company tomorrow. Listen, nobody wants that job at that point. And there are a lot more hard times than there are good times. So it's not all it's cracked up to be, but I wouldn't change it. I wouldn't trade it for anything.
Well, it's challenging.
Yes.
That's challenging. I get a lot of people that will, I'm going to dabble in politics for a second, but you'll see why. I get a lot of people that'll hit me on Twitter saying, President Trump's had 6 bankruptcies in his career. He's a total failure. Now I look now he's also had 600 companies in total and 6 bankruptcies. As an entrepreneur, I look at that. And I say, wow, this guy only had 1 failure out of 100. That's amazing. And other people say, no, if he's had 6 bankruptcies, he's a failure. Isn't failure part of entrepreneurship? Haven't most of us had failures?
100%. I mean, I don't know that I know a successful entrepreneur that hasn't had at least 1 horrific failure. And in most cases, a period in their life where they were flat broke, where they lost everything.
And I'm going to say, you and I are both part of Strategic Coach. I'm going to say in Coach, that probably is 2 or 3 failures. Would you agree with that? Or
say that again. I didn't follow that.
I'm going to say with a lot of people that we both know at Strategic Coach, I would say that failure rate is probably 2 or 3 times. Until making it work.
Yeah, that's why I'm saying at least 1. Certainly, many have had multiple.
Now, people have no idea what Strategic Coach is. You arrogant bastards.
thank you for that, because that's the last thing I want this to come off as. So Mark,
I'm just kidding. Mark,
you brought it up, so I'll let you explain it.
Strategic Coach is an entrepreneurial organization. Dan Sullivan has been on the show before, and Dan and I actually do a podcast together that some of our listeners are familiar with. Called the American Checklist. And Strategic Coach is basically an organization of entrepreneurs where we meet every quarter. Everyone in the group is an entrepreneur, is, you know, runs a company that they created. We don't have executives in there. They're entrepreneurs. And we're there to, we obviously learn from Dan, but we also, I think, are there to support each other too in the organization.
Yeah, and I think in its simplest form, Dan is just an incredible coach and teacher of entrepreneurs, helping us, you know, become better at what we are, clearer at what we are, help us build better companies. And so it's all about just helping us be better entrepreneurs.
So it's not a group of guys who just get together and pat each other on the back and say, boy, you've done really well. You're really there to learn something.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Yeah, for sure. Strategic Coach is a learning tool in the context of entrepreneurs.
Yeah, you're literally going to an all-day class every 90 days. And
so it's your college.
Exactly. It really is. You know, and that's, let me grab that point, because while I didn't go to college, I have spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on education. And so all I do is I get educated my way. Mm-hmm. So you need to get educated, whatever your career Absolutely. Is. Yeah. It's just
you're getting educated on the things you need.
It's really funny. I think that people get the idea in their head that you don't learn, maybe not this extreme, but you just, once you finish your formal education, then that's the end of the learning. You just go out and work and do everything else. When in fact, the thing that keeps you young and vibrant, as far as I'm concerned, certainly for me, I'm 78, almost 79, wow. is that constant learning, constant, you know, figuring things out, looking at them, dissecting them, trying to be smart about it, yeah. and finding out things that you never knew before.
Here, here.
And to me, that's youth.
Here, here. Real entrepreneurs are always learning. And Chuck, I'm going to give you one other thing that is helpful with a coach environment, and that is when you're a real entrepreneur, and I always liken being a real entrepreneur as somebody who does a high wire act with no net under them. You don't have a lot of people to talk to.
We've had burning ropes and high wires. Dangerous territory.
But you don't have a lot of people to talk to that understand what you're about. Because, are you going to go talk to somebody and say, you know, geez, I'm really having a tough time. And they're going to say, geez, I feel so bad for you because you drive this new car and you have a nice house and you own your own business. Why am I, I don't have any sympathy for what you're going through. Whereas in something like a coach or something, you do have peers who understand that it's not easy all the time. And they've been there, and you might talk about a problem that you're facing right now that they faced several years ago. And they can certainly, if not empathize, they can, sometimes offer good advice. It is kind of a lonely spot.
So let me ask you this. Every entrepreneur probably has a very different business. Do you have a lot in common other than just your entrepreneurship? I mean, when you say that, Mark, it sounds like, well, I had this exact same problem in my business, and this is how I approached it. This is how I solved it or whatever. Is there a lot of commonality other than just being entrepreneurs?
I'm going to let Gino answer that, but I'm going to give you a quick answer first. So in the group that Gino and I are in, we have, 43 people in our group. Mm-hmm. So two of my people went to a coach class. And there in their class were all of the integrators and managers from members of the group that Gino and I are in. My people came back to me and they said, oh my God, there's more of you.
Well, so here's how I would answer it, Chuck. That is such a great question. And by the way, I want to compliment you on your questions and your curiosity. Your questions are great. I love how you're.
Well, thank you very much. I made my living being curious, quite frankly.
Well, that is apparent. So here's the answer. Yes, 100%, 80% of the issues that entrepreneurs are dealing with in their organizations are the same ones over and over again. And so the system that I created, EOS, was created because I took over a family business when I was 25 and I did a big turnaround. I turned the business around, grew it, ran it. We successfully sold it. And it was through that experience and an experience in an organization called Young Entrepreneurs Organization that was my light bulb moment where I said, wow, these people are all facing the exact same problems. And so I created a system that addresses 80% of all those issues. And so it's this universal solution. It's this operating system, because the reality of it is, let's pretend you have a 10 to 250 person organization. It's all about people, and it's all about getting people on the same page and rowing in the same direction. And so, yes, they're all facing very similar issues. And
so if they're similar issues, you have similar.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And it's just the difference is this person.
Is the word I was looking for. You have similar solutions.
Yeah. And the difference is, you know, this person is selling an app and this person is running hair salons and this, you know, the businesses are all different, but the issues going on are very, very similar.
And the people tend to be very similar, Chuck, as far as their values and their passions and what they care about. You know, entrepreneurs, we're kind of, I think we're unique amongst the population in general, but when you put us all together, we're very similar.
You know, it's funny. I just thought about this because it was kind of a seminal moment in my life. Not to make this all about me, but it's just kind of an interesting thing.
Well, it is your show, so it's okay.
My father worked as a salesman for another group of people all of his life, and he did a lot of different jobs, but he ended up really being a salesman. And eventually that company didn't go out of business, but he bought it. And when he bought it, he paid, I think, $100,000, and his partner paid $100,000. So it was a $200,000 acquisition. This was in 1954.
It was a ton of money back then.
And the first $10,000, I remember he borrowed from my grandmother, and it was the first $10,000 he paid back. But at that point, I lost my dad. He was absolutely wrapped up in this business 24/7, trying to make ends meet, trying to buy trucks that were used and make them look halfway decent when they got on the road. I worked for three summers all summer long, ruined my football career, whatever it was at the time. I couldn't do anything because I had to go work for my dad, who was the toughest taskmaster on earth. And it was 12 and 14 hour days on docks and driving trucks and everything. When I was 15, I didn't have a license, but I had to drive a truck in emergencies. And he certainly was an entrepreneur. But then I remember when I was 18, I went into his office and he was sitting behind the desk, and he said, come here, Butch, I want to ask you something. He said, you know, I built this company for you. And I said, really? He said, yeah. I said, now you've worked hard in it since you were 15 years old, and I just want you to know something. I want you to be prepared to take this over. And I think the most disappointing day in my father's life, when I looked across that desk at 18, I said, Dad, this is not what I want to do with my life. I'm sorry. And it really hit him like a ton of bricks. I'm not sure he ever got over it. Because he never saw me go on to do anything.
Yeah, and if I could grab that, you know, that gets to that point of that chapter about second and third generations, because I write that exact point about the parent who has this belief and passion and desire that they want to pass the business on to the next generation, and they do more damage than good because the kid is incapable of running the business or doesn't want the business, but mm-hmm. they're feeling so much pressure from the parent. So good for you for having the balls to say no. A lot of kids are forced to say yes, and they're miserable.
Yeah, I wasn't as smart as Chuck, and I actually stayed in the family business for a long time and hated it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then the other thought, to just go back to that previous conversation, you know, when we talk about entrepreneurs and this class that Mark and I go take, you know, it's not about this elitist club that we're creating. It's just, you know, those are like-minded people coming together, just like robotics enthusiasts, comic enthusiasts going to Comic-Con, when accountants come together for whatever they come together for. It's just,
I know that's a party there, isn't
yeah.
it?
The accountant convention. But the point is,
you're a salesman.
Yeah, but the point is, they're in heaven because they're all talking about the stuff
the
that they're
thing.
Passionate about. Yeah, right. And so, you know, we're just talking about the stuff that we're passionate about. And so it's all about finding your passion, surrounding yourself with people that have that same passion, sports enthusiasts. I mean, it's then you're on your planet and surrounded by people that you have a lot in common, and it's all just it feels really good.
I always thought that insurance salesmen had kind of a condescending air about them because they have to explain everything to you. You could never understand what an insurance policy is.
I mean, think about the job, though. I've got to get you to give me money and bet that you're going to die, because the only way you can win is if you die. It doesn't really sound like winning.
Yeah, and but there's a business in that, and lots of entrepreneurs are very successful.
Man. They are.
You know?
So, Gino, to wrap up, if our listeners think that they're an entrepreneur, if they think their children should maybe forego college and consider entrepreneurship, in a short form, tell us what they ought to do. How can they learn this? I know, get the book. What else do they need to do?
Well, here's what let's start with the free route first. And so they can go to e-leap.com and take the assessment and see how they do on the assessment. Certainly buying the book then takes them into a deep dive into this. But what I would say is, number one, if you're someone listening that thinks that you might be an entrepreneur, do exactly that. Number two, if you're the parent of an entrepreneur in the making, you know, either send them to that website, buy them the book, or buy yourself the book and read it, or fill out that assessment thinking about your child so that you understand them better and you're able to have a better conversation with them. And then the third is, if you're an educator of entrepreneurs in the making or someone who wants to mentor them, this is the content. My goal is to make your life a heck of a lot easier, do 80% of the heavy lifting by doing the teaching so that you can then focus on answering questions, telling your stories, giving your insights. And so that's what I would urge. Go to e-leap.com again, or ideally buy the book.
I will be giving a lot of these books away.
Give them to me.
I appreciate that.
I'm going to send them to your kids.
I was going to say, I'm probably sending them to my kids. I'm a little old to start now.
But I will be giving a lot of these away to early entrepreneurs who call me.
I appreciate that.
And find out if they know what they're doing.
Gino Wickman, thank you very much. The name of the book again?
Is Entrepreneurial Leap.
Go out and buy it.
And if you go to entrepreneur. Yeah, and if you go to the show notes at bluntforcetruth.com, you look for the episode with Gino Wickman, you'll see links to Gino's website, links to Amazon where you can pick the book up. Everything will be right there. So if you're driving in your car, don't worry that you have to pull over and try to write something down.
Thank you, Gino. It was very informative. I learned a lot listening to you and encouraged as well. So thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it.
Had a blast. Thanks, guys.
Good. All right. That's our show for today. Thanks, everybody, for listening to Blunt Force Truth. You can give us a review on iTunes or Stitcher or Westwood
Podcast One.
I know. You have to forgive me for that. Podcast One. That's where we are. Thank you again, and we'll see you next time on Blunt Force Truth.